Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathy Kay and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, November 8th, 2021, and we are reading from the Big Book on page 97, two paragraphs beginning, "We seldom allow an alcoholic." Today's readers are Lorraine N. reading the 12 steps, Rhonda R. reading the 12 traditions, and reading the text are Karen W., Eileen M., and Lois P. Our newcomer greeter will be Mary B., and Leslie M. will give us announcements. And thanks to Ken for recording us. Today's share IDs from yesterday, November 7th, the special edition. The number is 18,043 or 18043. Sorry about that. My phone is going off. And this morning, November 8th, the 7 a.m.
Joanne.
One second. Sorry about that. I think I got it now. The share ID for this morning, November 8th at 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 18,046 or 18046. Let's see. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Lorraine N. to read the 12 steps of OA. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning, and thank you. Good morning, everyone. Here are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to read, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Lorraine N. Would Rhonda R. please read the 12 traditions of OA? Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Kathy. Thank you for your service. This is Rhonda R., grateful, recovered, compulsive eater in Georgia. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And thank you for the opportunity to do service. I'll pass.
Thank you, Rhonda R. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and when you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 97, and I will ask Karen W. to get us started. Good morning, Karen.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Kathy. This is Karen W., recovered from recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. We seldom allow an alcoholic to live in our homes for long at a time. It is not good for him, and it sometimes creates serious complications in a family. Though an alcoholic does not respond, there is no reason why you should neglect his family. You should continue to be friendly to them. The family should be offered your way of life. Should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there is a much better chance that the head of the family will recover. And even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. Well, I have no experience with anybody coming to live in my house, but where it says it's not good for him to live in our house for a long time. When I read that, I thought, well, you know, it's probably not good for the alcoholic or the compulsive eater or whoever it is to be given too many, to give too much. I was told one time that overgiving is the sunny side of control. So that was something that stuck out to me. And there's no reason why we should neglect his family or him. So there are two people that come to mind in my life. My daughter, who has some addictive issues, I believe, and my sister, who I believe is could benefit from overeating. And I've shared with both of them my journey and my recovery. And basically, that's all that I can do. And then to be the example and let them see the changes that have happened in me, and maybe that will, get them to maybe want that. And I've also heard it said that you may be the only big book people see. So I think that's a pretty big responsibility to recover and to, I guess, let people see what that recovery looks like. And for me, it looks like I'm happy most of the time. I interact better. I'm more present in family situations where I used to be just invisible because I didn't feel like I fit in. I felt I had nothing to contribute to conversations. And that's all very different since recovery. And even though he continues to drink or to eat, that's not a reason to just, close the door and say, that's it, I'm done. And so I talk a little bit more openly, especially with my sister about, I'm on a meeting, I'm on a Zoom meeting, I'm on a call, I'm talking to my sponsor, to make it, to really share that this is what my life is like now. And with my daughter, same thing. Probably a little bit more open with her. I share a little bit more with her about what's going on in my recovery. So I'm interested to hear what everybody else has to say. Thank you for the opportunity to do service, and thank you, everybody, for your service. I'll pass.
Thank you, Karen W., for getting us started this morning. So I am now going to take names of people who would like to share. And please remember that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day on this meeting in order that others might share their experiences too, those who don't speak often. Okay, who would like to share?
Penny L.C.
Penny L.C.
Rob H.
Rob H. Who else?
Eileen M.
Eileen M. Take a couple of more. Okay, we'll get started with those. I'm sure others will chime in later. Penny L.C., please go ahead.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for your service. This is Penny L.C., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from the state of Washington, and good morning to everyone. These paragraphs are a little challenging to relate to in our situation in this present day, but I do know a couple of things. They're giving us clear-cut directions on how to interact with other addicts and those affected by the disease of the spiritual malady, basically. So what I do know is if I allow another person to rely on me rather than God to solve their problems, I'm harming them. And so in that way, I know that I have to be cautious about how much time I even spend with a sponsee. Sometimes the call can be extended if necessary, but I have to be sure that I'm not just allowing them to rely on me more than their higher power. When it comes to the family of the addict, in that case, I would say that in this present day, the blessing is that we have Al-Anon to send people to. And I think there's so much value in that program. And I suppose I'm not technically supposed to speak of other programs, but that is that has served served me well in terms of just interacting with other addicts. And I know that when I've spoken to fellows that have the challenge of having another member in their family who is suffering from, say, compulsive overeating or another disease, you know, that's usually the topic that we that comes up to us or that comes up between us is have they sought out Al-Anon? Because it's being able to detach with love that's so important, and to have everyone have a source of support. So grateful that we do have all these various programs that are here to support us today. And I know that I wouldn't be in this peaceful, recovered state if it weren't for this wonderful program. So thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Penny Elsie, for your share. Rob H., please share with us.
Thanks, Rob H., compulsive overeater. I guess what made me want to share on this paragraph was the whole thing about somebody staying in your house. What made me want to share, though, was that I've been that person that stayed in other people's houses, and I'm only 2 years into this recovery, but I've just, you know, heard last week I heard people talking about this a little bit too, and then this week I don't think I've ever had anybody stay with me necessarily, but I've been the one that stayed with other people, and I really appreciate the idea that, you know, when I have stayed with other people, it made it easier for me to overeat and, you know, to do other things that I shouldn't be doing. So, I appreciate this paragraph just for that fact. And as far as what I do with this information now, you know, my aunt was one of the people that I stayed with, you know, after college. And she's been in the hospital. I just visited her last Thursday or Wednesday. I don't remember, but she's doing better. She had a tube, you know, she was tubed or whatever for breathing and eating and stuff. And anyway, you know, I had a lot of resentment towards her, and I don't even know why. I have no idea why. Just she asked me to do things around the house that I was living there rent-free, and I don't know, I was so selfish or whatever that I just didn't want to do those things. And so I had some resentment against her asking me that. But I'm just trying to, you know, trying to be there for her and my cousin and the rest of my family too. And that's the thing about coming into recovery is, like, that's what I wanted for recovery, was to, you know, reestablish connection with my family. And I'm slowly doing that. Somebody told me one time it took them like 40 years to get back to that. So I don't mind taking it one day at a time. You know, it's not going to be perfect, but, I'm glad this book exists and the meeting, and, that's all I got. I wanted to share last week at some time, but I didn't get on the meeting. So, that's all. Thanks, I guess.
Thank you, Rob H. Eileen M., please share with us.
Good morning, Kathy. This is Eileen M., gratefully recovered in New Hampshire. And, it is a challenging paragraph to relate to compulsive overeating, but what came to mind when I was reading this was some time ago I went to an OA retreat, and it was a step retreat for a weekend, and I had a roommate who is from the local area, and she asked me to sponsor her by the end of the weekend, and you know, she identified her trigger foods while we were on the retreat, you know, on Sunday, and I shared my experience with her, and what happened was, you know, she invited me to her home after the retreat, and I'd never done anything like that before, but I had the next day off from work, so I was able to go, and I, you know, went to her home, and you know, she started like taking out things in her kitchen cabinet and putting them on the counter. And, we started going through labels and reading labels together. And, you know, she was fairly new in program at the time. So I, told her, you know, what I do. And, she wanted what I had. So we just she removed foods from her home that, you know, would trigger her. And, it was just kind of interesting. You know, we kind of sat down and she made a generic food plan and then she went out shopping for the groceries. And I mean, it was just kind of interesting to do that. You know, I had never done anything like that. And it really helped me a lot too, you know. And we just kind of worked program together while I was there. I stayed overnight and then, you know, I went home the next day and we kind of resumed our, you know, sponsee relationship on the phone. It just kind of reminds me is, you know, all I can do really is to carry the message of recovery. And I'm really powerless over what the other person does with the information. I mean, you know, and, you know, sometimes, you know, what we do is we just plant the seed and, and sometimes it just takes what it takes for that person to realize that, oh yeah, you know, that's my experience, and I'm really grateful to be on this line and to be sharing. Thank you. I pass. Kathy, we don't hear you.
Hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks, Eileen, for your share. And I'm now going to take some more names of people who would like to share. Please give me your first name and your first initial of your last name. Thank you. Who would like to share? And perhaps I should repeat for those who came on late, we're on page 97 in the big book, and we're reading and studying the second paragraph, we seldom allow an alcoholic, and we're reading through two paragraphs, ending with, we'll find life more bearable.
So Jody
who, E. I'm sorry, who was that?
Jody E.
Oh, hi, Jody. Thank you. Jody E. Who else? I know it's a difficult set of paragraphs to relate to in some ways, but...
Liz F.
Liz F. Okay.
Judith R.
Bruce E.
Judith R. Bruce E. And was there one more person?
Felicia F.
Alisa F.
Felicia with an F.
Oh, I'm sorry, Felicia.
No worries.
Great. And anyone else? Okay, we'll go with these for now. We have Jody E., Liz F., Judith R., Bruce E., and Felicia F. Please get us started, Jody.
Thank you so much, Kathy and Team Monday. My name is Jody E., and I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic in California. So, this idea of letting an addict live with us when they're down and out? It's a very good question. Do we do it or do we not? And I think it's by case by case, prayer and meditation. If it's a family member, you know, it's so very difficult to watch our family members suffer, to be in their addiction, whatever it may be. They might even become homeless. What do we do? Do we give them shelter? And if it's a family member, it's unlikely that we're sponsoring them, that they want to hear what we have to say, which makes it even more complicated. If it is a sponsee, what then? You know, I've never had that experience. Well, actually, I have a sponsee in a different program, and it was a difficult situation. But by working the steps myself, and through constant prayer and meditation, God's will can be revealed. And as far as neglecting or not neglecting his family, if we know them, we don't have to neglect them. We can talk to them. We will talk to them probably and discuss the situation perhaps if we know them. If it's our own family, more so. They can be offered our way of life, but of course they cannot be. We can lead a horse to water, but we cannot make him drink. And this sentence, should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there is a better chance that the head of the family will recover. That's an interesting sentence. Maybe, maybe not. We cannot control anybody's choices in life, their disease. We didn't cause it and we cannot cure it. That's up to them. But we can be loving and kind and thoughtful towards them and to their family. Why not? Yeah. So anyway, it is nice that we do have Alan on today. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jody E. Liz F., please share with us.
Hi, it's Liz S. in New Hampshire. And I guess I'm sort of coming at this paragraph from a slightly different angle, which is more of the sponsor, and I was a sponsee, but this person went far and above what I've ever experienced, and it was just prior to my being correctly diagnosed with a very debilitating and serious condition of depression and anxiety, and I said that also to just share it because I think it's relative, even though we're in a 12-step program, we still have to deal with these things. And I had 2 years of abstinence, and I was very worried about losing it. It was just one of these things that came up, and I couldn't shake it. It was very, very distressing to me. And she took me in for a month. And I lived in New York at the time, so it was a few blocks away from my apartment, but she took me in for a month. And eventually my mother came and took me out to Westchester, where I was seen by the right doctor. But that reminds me of this paragraph, and that she went above and beyond, and just I was able to some extent to take care of myself, but she gave me a place to live that was safe, and that's what I needed. And today the way I can practice out of my program is, how can I take that message out into the world? I'm in a new apartment situation. There are a lot of people around me who are elderly. How can I take that message out into their lives, so that people feel also safe in my presence? You know, I'm no longer someone who's living in all of her defects, but how can I give that service to others? In what way? If it's not bringing someone into my home, how can I make them feel at home here? To me, it's almost a principle in many terms, rather than the actual physical doing so. How can I make people just feel safe in my company? at home in my company. And that's really all I had to say. I don't know whether it made any sense, but it felt right. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Liz S.
Can't hear you, Kathy.
Okay, I don't know why I keep getting muted. Sorry about that. I did thank Liz S. for her share. And Judith R., please share with us.
Thank you, Kathy. This is Judith R., gratefully recovered in Vermont. In 1989, I drove across country to go to grad school, and I'd been in OA since 1978, so I knew that we were a good group of folks. And so at one point, I went to an OA meeting halfway across the country and asked if I could stay overnight at somebody's house. And somebody took me in. I don't know to this day whether I was just being entitled or what, but I just knew that these were my brothers and sisters. So the other thing I wanted to share is that there is such a thing as Al-Anon. It's for the family and friends of overeaters, and it's back on its feet again. It tends to come and go, but I just want people to know if any. I do get an email from them every week, so if anybody wants, I'm on the phone list. And with that, I pass. Thank you all.
Thank you, Judith R. Bruce E., please share with us.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Thank you, everybody on the line. Happy to get to share today. And neat paragraph. Let's see. Well, I've been there on this. I've been homeless. I've been slept on people's couches and stuff. Really appreciated them letting me have that opportunity to do that. I even remember a couple of people that volunteered to help me when I was pretty down and out. One guy said he could get some, he didn't have any money to help me, but he could get some money if he could borrow it. That was pretty good of him to say that. And then somebody else said he had could help me out. Didn't have to, but he did. Anyway, how far do I want to go to help somebody? So I got this friend that's been incarcerated in North Carolina prison system 23 years. And he's going to be getting out anytime. He could get out tomorrow. And am I going to take him in? He's not going to have a place to live. Am I going to take him into my house and let him live with me? Well, first of all, it says sometimes creates serious complications in a family. I'd be a little nervous about him living with me, first of all, especially if he relapsed. Then I would really, really be nervous. But I think I could trust him as long as he's not relapsing. But how would my wife handle that? Probably not so good. But how could I help him? I can get him into a place to stay. I know some places where I could get him in to stay. Where he could go in, you know, halfway houses and stuff. So that would help him a lot. And why couldn't I, after he got out of there, if he needed help, get him a place to stay and pay the rent for a few months? I could do that. You know, I could help him that way. I could do that. That wouldn't be too much trouble. Do I really want to help? The family, you know, this guy's probably got family somewhere in North Carolina. I would love to put him in the car after he get out and take him over to see some of his family. You know, that would be a tremendous help for him to maybe get a hold of some of his kids or his relatives and stuff. Then it says here, much better chance that the head of the family will recover. Even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. Yeah, well, the family is important. The family should be offered your way of life. In other words, we're reaching out to family. So I was sponsored by a guy in OA years ago, Richard. He passed on now. But I got to find his, I need to go back and find his phone number and call his wife and tell her how much I appreciated him helping me. I think I might have told her that once or twice, but he's been gone number quite a while now. But she would probably appreciate hearing that if she's still alive. I know she's getting up there in years too. But he was a great help to me, this Richard was. And I wouldn't doubt, looking back on it, I didn't need to live on somebody's house then, but other than my own, but he would have probably would have taken me into his house and let me live with him for a while. He probably would have, you know, most likely, if I would have needed that. So, you know, we got to have a little wisdom about this, ask for wisdom. But we can help a lot of people. And, you know, now it might need just encouragement, making a phone call, just talking to somebody, just sponsoring somebody, reading a big book with them. You know, there's just a lot of people that we can help. And it doesn't have to be taken away. I mean, it can be just all kinds of neat ways that we can help people. And as far as the money goes, generally I don't give money. I mean, I would in certain circumstances. If I don't know the person, I wouldn't give money. I'd pray for them, but I wouldn't give money unless I really knew that it was okay, you know. So we do have to, we do need to, I need to be sure that I have wisdom, and I really am praying for wisdom. So I'm very happy to be, I'm grateful that I got up today, did third step prayer, seventh step prayer, prayed, meditated, read some, and went on meetings, and I'm on this meeting. And I'm abstinent today. I work with my sponsor today, reading a big book. I'm just doing really pretty good, you know. I mean, I'd like to be doing better, but I'm doing good. Thank you. And I pass.
Thank you, Bruce E. Felicia F., please share with us.
Hi, I'm Felicia F. Excuse me, Felicia S. from New Jersey. I am a recovering compulsive overeater, and I'm very grateful for this meeting this morning. So I have experience in another fellowship with bringing people into my home. I don't have that same experience in OA, but I want to believe that what these two paragraphs are saying to us is, we use common sense, but at the point that we're doing this, we are connected to the God of our understanding, and we're allowing that power to guide us. And for me, there's a technique called how to listen to God. And I would ask God to guide me if the situation were to present itself. You know, what is God putting in my path and why? But what struck me so much was more the second paragraph and the last line, and even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. We cannot get anybody sober in the food, in any substance, right? Our job when we sponsor is just to put our hand, their hand in the hand of their higher power. And there's such a promise of hope here. You know, whether we get sober or not, whether we get abstinent in the food or not, our family that's been cooked in the soup of our addiction doesn't have to continue to suffer. And they could practice these same principles and get well, even if we don't get well. And that it is highly more likely that we will be able to do better. You know, my ex-husband came into program in a different fellowship 5 years into our marriage when I had already been sober for quite some period of time. And it made a difference and did make things more bearable. You know, ultimately that marriage had to end. But I love this promise of, and even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. There is so much hope and promise in this book. Thank you and have a blessed day, everyone.
Thank you, Felissa F. Okay, I can now take a few more names. We have about time for two or three more shares. Who would like to share?
This is Ronnie B. in Missouri.
Okay, Ronnie B., thank you. Anyone else?
This is Joanne from Ohio.
Joanne from Ohio. Okay, anyone else? All right, we'll go with those two and see what happens. Ronnie B., please share with us.
Thank you. Ronnie, compulsive overspender. It can be a tough couple of paragraphs to read and relate to, but the truth is, so in terms of OA, I have not had anyone live with me, but I've had people in the program who come to visit for a period of time. And, you know, at first they were coming to get some recovery, but then that's not the case. That's not what happened. So truthfully, I had to break those relationships because of all the food. You know, all the food that was in the house. And I'm like, I'm not about that. So it's not about that's not having food neutrality. It's about a boundary, and I didn't want that. So that's in terms of OA. In terms of other programs, I have tons of experience with that. My daughter went into a young people's sobriety group, and kind of the way that works is people come to that sobriety group from out of town, out of state, and when that happens, they try to hook that kid up with another parent. And so I've had more than a handful of people live with me for extended periods of time. Some of it worked because they stayed sober. And there was this one young girl that came, and she had diseases other than alcoholism, and I thought, I'll try it. And I was glad I tried it. So I was willing to try because I saw what my family was getting from my own daughter being sober. And within 6 weeks, I had to make a phone call and say, I need you to come and get her today. There was a threat made to a family member. And I will do a lot, but I will not put my family in harm's way. So another person maybe has a chance, but if there's going to be a threat, it can't be under my roof. So I did that, and I made the call, and they came and picked her up at night. And I'll tell you what, that was the right decision for me and my family. And so sometimes, and I, by the way, I just want to say, I'm in Al-Anon like 40 years, so this was not a codependent thing. It's the way that program worked. You know, the parents were very involved, and I was grateful to be involved. And I believe I'd be very involved if someone from OA needed something, because I realize that I get the greatest recovery when I'm out of myself and helping others. And so that's my 2 cents worth. I don't know if it helped anyone else, but it was a great experience for me and my family. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronnie B. And Joanne from Ohio, please share with us. Joanne? Is Joanne from Ohio on the line? I guess we lost Joanne. I can take another person. Is there someone who would like to share?
Hi, it's Cindy C. Can I share?
Sure, Cindy. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Cindy C. from Illinois. Gratefully working on recovering. Still a newcomer-ish. But I do want to thank everyone for your welcome calls I received over the last couple of weeks. It was really very special. And for me, this paragraph, this selection means not only keeping, having somebody at my house, but like some other people had mentioned, like how far am I willing to go to help somebody and to help them with dignity? And I remember very clearly a time where I had flown in to a city where a lot of my family is from for a family occasion. I think it was a wedding. I don't even remember what it was. And I had pre-measured all my food and pre-weighted and was going to take it, on the underside of the plane so it would stay frozen. And that way I would be able to enjoy the celebrations without having to worry about being worried about getting the food and measuring the food and just, because it was just going to be challenging for me. And I was there without a car. Someone was going to pick us, my family up from the airport and then bring us back. And I was there with some little kids, my little kids, and I knew I was not going to be able to be busy with it. And I realized when I had gotten on the plane after all the hullabaloo in the airport with the security and everything, that the bag with my food was left on my kitchen counter. And I was going to get there very close to when the celebrations were going to be happening. I was not going to be able to prepare, shop, and get somewhere to get my food again. And I was, still in the beginning of stages of abstinence at that time. And I didn't know what to do. So I called my sponsor, who actually lived, around 15 to 20 minutes, very nearby to where my family lived. And I asked her, what should I do? And she said, don't worry about it. I'm cooking for my family for supper. I'm cooking abstinence supper. I'm going to take care of it for you. And when I had gotten there, not only had she taken care of it for me, pre-measured and everything because she knew what my food plan was, but she had packaged it up not just in tinfoil pans or, she had really packaged it up as if I was getting it from a restaurant, complete with a little flour, just making the whole thing just look so nice. And it made me feel so good. Not only was, the celebration celebratory, but I was able to really enjoy it because my food was not on my head. I was not in the food. I was able to really enjoy it. And it showed me a lot about, and helping somebody is not just about providing what they need, but going the extra length to provide them with their dignity and being able to help somebody realize that they're not a hanger-on and they're not a freeloader. And somebody's personal dignity is something very major, too, to be helpful for. And I guess on some small scale, eventually after the celebrations were over, before we had flown back, I was able to stop by and say thank you. But my family ended up spending the day with her family. And that way I was able to just be out of the after celebration, which was very helpful. So I didn't have to be, dealing with the afterwards, which is sometimes more triggering for me than the actual occasion. So I just am grateful for my sponsor then, and I'm grateful for the lesson that I learned. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cindy C. Okay, it's now time for us to begin closing the meeting. I want to thank everybody who showed up today, who listened, who shared. It's really very special. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164. And then we'll say the Serenity Prayer. Eileen M., would you please read A Vision for You?
Hi there. This is Eileen M., recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.